For January the 30th, 2026, we talk about Terminator 2D, No Fate, My Winter Car, Many Nights a Whisper, and much more. Welcome to Level 573. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jal Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Jala, welcome back.
That was like the most chill I've ever done my little intro voice. Anyway.
I was going to comment on it, but I was like, no, that would be pedantic.
No, that's all right. What's been going on with me? All of the drama aside, like the usual life being life drama and house falling apart drama. I've added a soundtrack to my game, and I'm working on the sound effects, and those are currently available on Itch. It's jalachan.itch.io. Shattered Reminiscence, it is my game in progress. And the SFX, I'm still in the middle of working on adding more of those, doing some mixing and stuff like that of my sound library. But there is a soundtrack. You can play through the entire game in text format. The next thing after I finish sound will be art, but we'll get there when we get there. So
now
that is that. So yay. Other than that, totally inconsequentially, but very important to my life, I recently came across milk oolong tea, and it is like my new favorite tea. It has nothing to do with milk. It's like the creaminess of what it is. It's kind of like a kind of somewhat sweet, buttery kind of warm cream, condensed milk, light floral fragrances like orchid or lilac, sugar cane or caramel. Those are the flavors that you get.
Are you reading it to us right now? Are you reading it off?
I was reading it off of a website at that particular moment. But like,
by the way, I'd like to thank our new sponsors.
Great. Well, anyway, so milk oolong tea is actually kind of hard to come by. Like, there's only a few places that make actual milk oolong tea. A lot of places have flavored ones. But anyway, that's like been my newest thing that I like to drink thing. So I just have to be careful because tea is insidious, and that you don't have a hard spike of caffeine, like a big rush like you do with coffee, but then like you just realize you're very awake for, you know, like after you've consumed X amount of tea, and you're like, oh, this is my life now. I'll just be like laying in bed staring at stuff. So
there was definitely a time where I thought, okay, well, I'm going to stop drinking coffee at around, you know, before like 3 o'clock or so, and I'll switch to tea. So like, if I want to have a nice warm beverage in the evening, I'll do that. And it's like, oh, green tea is good. Antioxidants, blah, blah, blah. And then I was like, why am I sleeping so shittily? It's because of exactly what you just said, Joe.
Herbal tea is the solution. Yeah. I do a lot. I would recommend for tea bags, if you like tea bags instead of like loose leaf tea, I would recommend traditional medicinals brand. They have pharmaceutical grade herbs that they use, which means that they are higher quality than the culinary stuff or below that you get in most other herbal teas that you purchase. So I love their teas.
The only thing I can think to say is everyday carry, I go crazy for lemon ginger tea. I think of like Twinings is the name of it. I have no idea if that's good or bad.
Twinings is a pretty like mainstay brand. Mostly, I want to say it comes from the UK.
Yeah. So.
I want to continue with the tea regimen input. I do vanilla tea, and Mimi does ginger tea at night, and that's
I bet nice way to relax. Great.
Yeah,
I just got one that's cinnamon apple chamomile, and I'm looking forward to trying that.
Cinnamon apple is the best flavor combination you can have.
But it's chamomile, cinnamon apple chamomile, and I'm like, okay, I'm looking forward to that. So.
Nice.
Make it fall. Yeah. Right. The only tea that's in constant rotation in our house is called Throat Coat Tea.
Oh, okay. Yes. That's your traditional medicinals brand. I love that.
Oh,
tea.
Is that right?
Yes. Lemon Echinacea flavor, because there's two of them. The lemon echinacea one's better. So I don't know which one you've got. You'll have to look.
No,
but like if it doesn't
like
say
honey,
lemon okay. Well, if it doesn't say like lemon echinacea on it, try the lemon echinacea sometime. It's real good.
Okay. Yeah. I'll keep an eye out. But yeah, that's like it is no one in our house would consider themselves a tea drinker, but there is always someone whose throat is scratchy. So that gets worked in.
Yeah. I've known Throat Coat since my school choir days. Uh-huh. And even back then we would laugh at the name.
Yeah.
I mean, it's you can't be confused about what it does.
Right.
Ben, what you been up to?
Yeah. I think I talked about this in the green room. It's mostly been foot trauma over the past couple of weeks, but I won't get too in the specifics of that. But it does feed into one of the games that I played this week because I knew I would be sitting down a lot this weekend. But outside of that, I saw 28 Years Later, Bone Temple. Good movie. If you like the first 28 Years Later, you'll probably like that. But it's pretty divisive, it seems like. So depends on whether or not you're down for the weirdness or not.
I'm just sad they didn't stick to the bit and go 28 decades later.
So Bone Temple in my mind has started replacing Machine for Pigs as like a sequel name. So it's just a fun thing to throw on.
Amazing.
At the end of something else.
Stardew Valley 2, the Bone Temple.
Yeah, yeah. just a fun little game to play. Nice.
Love it.
Yeah, we're doing 28 Days Later for the next Unfilmable. To try and draft on some of that heat that Bone Temple has. Yeah.
I've only seen I think it's the opening scene where the guy like abandons his wife and runs.
The weeks and, later.
And, yeah. Is that weeks? Okay, there you go. Saw that and I was like, yeah. Hey, I don't have the capacity for this. Uh-huh. Right. It's as close as I've gotten to the series.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So we, with the snowmageddon sweeping through the country, have had all snow days so far this week. Mm-hmm. So right now, while recording, my kids are set to go to school tomorrow, but they've been off for a couple days in a row. And we did some sledding and outdoors and stuff, but really what it's turned into is playing Pathfinder. Mm-hmm. So the kids couldn't get to school, but they could sure get to our house.
Well, it's all neighborhood kids, right?
Yeah, for the most part. And then also making music with their Christmas present. For Pathfinder, it was an entire session dedicated to shopping, which I did not think these sixth grade boys would be up for, but man, I should have known. Like, everyone loves shopping in Pathfinder. And so just they did all the typical weapon upgrades and buy this item, buy that stuff. And then they're like, can we all buy pets? And I looked at them, I'm like, a guard dog is 2 silver pieces to buy. So yeah, I guess you can. And then we proceeded to role play. Apparently Otari has a shop for birds, a shop for lizards, and 2 shops for cats. That we went through, and that was an absolute blast.
I hope that the lizards and birds are large enough to deal with the cats, because otherwise there will soon only be certain animals left.
Just cats. Eventually, right. It's just cats.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. We might have to. How hard do I want to lean into the simulation aspect of this this world? So it's. Luke has a tiger because he actually took Beastmaster as a level on his last level up.
Who was selling a tiger?
No, he just gets one because you take it as a level up. Yeah. There wasn't really a fully... I was like, because he's a necromancer, I was like, so it's an undead tiger? He's like, nah, just a tiger. I would give you an undead tiger. He's like, no.
So, well, you have to make sure that he has to feed that sucker, though.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. see the aforementioned lizards and birds and cats.
Right.
Probably the decision that I will most regret in the coming months is as they're talking to the bird guy, he's like, you know, I'll sell you a parrot for this much. You do have to pay extra if you want one of the ones that I haven't taught to cuss. And they promptly chose. They're like, hell yeah, let's get one that cusses. So the parrot's name is Bleep, which is very fun.
That's good.
Yeah, so that's that. And then on the music side, so Jen has gotten into, got a record player. And
okay.
Has been doing all that. And we had thrifted a bunch of like story records, like old timey, the Scarecrows, you know, basically, it's Roy Bolger, whatever the guy who played the Scarecrow in the original Wizard of Oz, like voiced a like Scarecrow's Oz adventure story. And then there was Peter Pan, but the Peter Pan one was, you know, skipped. But it skipped on a very specific part where Wendy is like protesting. She's like, I won't. And then it would skip and come back around to that. And so you'd get like, I won't. I won't. And it's like, all right, clip that shit. We're making a song. And so my kids have been writing lyrics about all the chores that they don't like to do, things they don't like being told to do.
Therapy.
Yes. So it's been very fun, and while I will appreciate the less having to be on constantly for the full day with the kids in school, it will also be like, I don't know, I was kind of having fun too. So
nice.
That's been me.
No, that's great. I mean, so I've a lot of good memories from childhood of those like multiple snow days in a row times. Yeah.
Yeah. It is the like a little mini like between, I feel like, Christmas and New Year's, you just lose track of what day it is, what time it is, what's going on, and it kind of puts you back into that time hole a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
What about you? No,
I have been trapped inside. So like today was the first day I left the house since Friday. Yeah, I mean, we got so much snow. I think that like over the course of like Saturday and then like over Sunday, I think we got like 12, 14 inches, something like that.
That's crazy.
You know? So like, you'd be really happy you have cats and not dogs. Oh my Lord.
Right. Yeah. And like it was actually like a little bit scary. It would have worked out fine because I just would have had to shovel, but like, we haven't really gotten a lot of snow here recently. I have my parents' old snowblower because they moved to a condo where they plow the driveways, whatever. So we got it out because my brother and I share it, and it wouldn't start. So like, I'm happy that we got it out and checked it, you know, a few days in advance, because like, I had to whip out my summer car knowledge with my brother and just be like, okay, like, all right. So this is the sound that it's making. Obviously the starter, the solenoid and stuff are working, but no fuel is getting to the ignition. It won't turn over. So like, it was like 2-3 days of just like him coming over and us like taking stuff apart. Ultimately we had to like clean the carburetor out. But it worked. Put it together, and yeah, no. So I didn't have to like shovel, you know, 4 times over the course of 12 hours. Yeah,
yeah. Like my brother, brutal. My brother-in-law. So my sister lives in Pennsylvania, and so like my brother-in-law, who never texts us ever. Texted us to show us all the snow, and he's like, yep, I gotta shovel all this crap, you know, more or less. Yeah. And then, you know, he sent out like however long later, he sent pictures of there, it's clear, but we're getting more snow tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And you know, like my mom's like, oh, that's horrible, you know, and things like that. And meanwhile, he's like, no, this is free gym. I don't have to pay for a gym, and I'm getting my workout. I'm doing all this weightlifting and cardio and, you know, whatever. And he was just real sweet and funny. So
yeah, Yeah. Never would have bought a snowblower. You know, just it's a luxury. Don't really need. But I'm happy that we ended up getting it to work because it was a time saver more than anything.
I imagine you just cackling the entire time you're using it.
I don't know about cackling. we definitely like there were there was high fives when we got it started, like when it actually. But everything else has just been packing. And it just. The view, this entire room is just full of boxes and totes and stuff, you know, of just trying to sort things out. I've been going through a bunch of stuff. If Moxie was here, I would talk about some of the old newspaper articles and stuff that I found. Like, it was so funny, like finding it and remembering, like, oh yeah, our Halo group was featured in the local newspaper in the entertainment page. It was so, that reporter, I don't know what he was on, because like a couple of weeks before that too, there was like an Ohio State bill, like about some kind of, you know, labeling on video games, mature video games. This is back in like 2004. Okay. And I was interviewed for that. And then he found out, like, oh, here's this big game coming out. Like, there's just a photo of me, Moxie, and then a bunch of our high school friends in my basement, you know, like posing for a photo, you know, on the couch playing, you know, just about like, oh, how all these people are excited about Halo 2. Yeah.
That's and awesome.
I mean, it looks, it's akin to like a band photo.
Right.
A little bit, yeah. Moxie's sitting up in the front and I'm standing in the back for some reason. I don't know.
You're at the drama, well, you were, apparently.
You were hosting.
Yes. Yeah.
Were hosting. You were making sure everybody, you know.
Yeah. Also, it wasn't entirely posed because I'm in the middle of saying something and they chose that photo.
So. Yeah. Did you dirty?
Yeah, a little bit. That's great. But yeah, just finding a bunch of stuff like that. Cool. You know, and then deciding what to keep and what not to. I kept that clipping. But sweet. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I have going on. I think we should talk about video games. And to do that, we need to do the regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss? And why don't we get started with...
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you have been away the longest, so I will throw it to you.
Yeah, sure. So the first one I want to talk about is Terminator 2D, No Fate. So this is an arcade-style side-scrolling 2D action platformer that was developed by Bitmap Games and published by Reef Entertainment, and it came out in December of last year. Okay. So, you know, just like a month ago. And anyway, there's 8 levels, and after that, there's a branching point where you can go a bunch of different ways, and depending upon your choice, you have additional levels for each of these different things. So there's like, I think a total potential number of levels of like 15 levels, depending on your path. Mm-hmm. So, and then the first playthrough, the game requires you to do like the path that takes you through T2, because this is a T2 video game. I should have said that at the top. It's not T2D just because 2D, I mean T2.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, like that's the pun there.
Propane maniacs.
Yeah. Right. So, but yeah, like in this game, you alternate between Sarah and John and the T-800, depending upon what level it is, as you go through different scenes in the movie. Like the first time you're the T-800, of course, is when you drop down in the bar, the cowboy bar, and you're buck naked and you have to like beat somebody up and get their clothes. And the whole bar is after you in this particular version. But anyway, it's got multiple game modes to unlock. I've only messed with story mode so far, but there's also arcade, infinite mode, boss rush, mother of the future, which I don't know what that is, and then level training as well, so you can get better at each of the levels. Because this is a score-based game that's, again, it's meant to be like an arcade style So
looks similar in some of the levels to like a Metal Slug or a Contra.
Right.
Yeah. Like that level of zoom.
Right. And it plays very much like that. There aren't as many power-ups or anything like that. The levels are a bit shorter, but overall, like I enjoy my time with it so far. And it's, of course, a game that really is trading on you coming back and trying to get better at the levels and learn all the secrets and stuff, because, you know, that plus there's branching paths. So, the graphics are on point. I like the way that it looks. I love the music. It plays well. It plays just like how these games play. So,
I love the continue screen.
Yeah.
the countdown as the thumbs up goes down in the lava.
And then it'll amazing. Give you a thumbs up if you continue. And I don't remember what it does if I think
flips it just the bird. Goes
on. Yeah. Right. No, I bet he probably just falls into the lava or whatever. Yeah. But either way, it's fun. It's cute. It's referential. The negative reviews for this game, mostly that I saw, were fussing about the price of it because it's a short game and it's a $30 game. And people are like, I don't want to pay it for what it's worth. I don't want to buy it for that price. I want to...
Then wishlist it and wait. Right. Yeah.
Right. And there was literally somebody who was like, oh yeah, originally I gave it 5 stars, but now I knocked it down to 3 because I got mad because it was shorter. And it's but the quality is there. Why are you plus this is an arcadey game. It's meant for you to play it over and over. It's not you play it once and that's the end of your experience. Goodbye. That's not what this style of game is. Like what?
I beat every fight in Mortal Kombat in 20 minutes. What a rip.
Yeah.
Right. So anyway, yeah, that's what I've got to say about that. Any questions about Terminator 2D?
It looks gorgeous. Oh, continue. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Ben.
Yeah, you mentioned the music. Do they use music from the movie?
They remix it, and they do. Okay. It's a fun remix, so I like it a lot. Yeah. And it's sad because they don't sell the soundtrack separate. Usually a lot of them do, but this one doesn't have it up separate. Of course, it's on YouTube. But
of course, yeah.
I'm watching these videos without sound, obviously. Is it all 8-bitified or what is that soundtrack like?
I actually can't tell you if it's 8-bit or not because my brain really will just... make it sound,
they'll fill it in the cinematic score. Yeah.
Right. So I'm like, I actually don't know. I imagine it would be like the 16-bit kind of stuff.
Chiptune kind of, yeah.
Yeah. Kind of semi-chiptune. I imagine that's what it is, but I might be totally wrong. So whatever,
Fair enough.
Okay. You started to mention this, but yeah, the animations look really clean in this, despite it being pixelated.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
Even just the pixel art in this, I don't know what kind of digitization they're doing. It's just ridiculously high quality shit going on here. I kind of understand the price for the amount of artistry that went into this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
This seems to, just from what I'm watching, have a big component of ducking into cover.
There's also cover
spaces.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
there's I mean, depending on who you're playing as too, right?
Well, it depends. They make up cover for places that don't have cover in the movie, and there's bosses that don't exist. Bandit Bob is one of the is actually I think the first boss, and it says Bandit Bob is approaching, and it's like, all right, whatever, cool. I guess that's where we are.
Is this at the bar?
No, this is you're playing Sarah Connor, and you're trying to find your kid, and your kid is being held somewhere. And Bandit Bob apparently took him, so I don't know. Or he's a mid-boss, I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah, this looks great. I didn't realize this came out so recently. I thought that it only started being recommended after I played the RoboCop game.
Yeah. Oh, good timing.
Yeah, I just seems like it would be the case. Rad. This looks rad. I would not have given this a second look if you didn't bring it here.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. Terminator Resistance is in my backlog. I want to play that, but that one's a first-person perspective shootery.
It's the same studio that did the RoboCop game. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wild.
So yeah. It's been recommended to me very highly. I haven't played it yet, but it's there.
Cool.
Anyway, so that's the first one. I actually don't know if I've ever talked about this before. I might have just talked to people about it when we weren't recording, because like I look back and I couldn't see it in my notes as me mentioning it before. Terror of Hemosaurus.
No, I don't remember you talking about this. That is a very distinctive name.
That is. So, Terror.
I'm imagining He-Man as a dinosaur now.
Oh, that would be very good, but no. This is a Rampage-like. It's a 2D monsters destroying cities kind of jag. It was developed and published by Lauren Lemke in 2022. The same person did a game called Super Blood Hockey, which was apparently a big deal at that time.
Oh, that looks really fun. Sorry. Yes. I had no idea about Super Blood Hockey. Looks like a throwback to like Genesis hockey games. Continue.
Yeah. Yes. So it's very cute. You can play with up to four people on local co-op. And I will say, spoiler for when I get to where I talk about like the play and everything, I feel like this is one of those, just like the original Rampage, where it's like, it's way more fun if you have more than one person playing. Like, it's not as fun playing single. It's kind of like, can you play Resident Evil 6 by yourself? Yes. Should you? No.
Rampage alone is a very dour affair.
Right.
It's so slow. Yeah.
So yeah, like, anyway, this is one where I feel like the local co-op would be the way to play it. It's unfortunate that there isn't online co-op, you know, kind of thing, but at the same time, it's one person doing the game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I imagine that code is the first thing to go. Yeah.
Right. So, but anyway, the story in this game is fun. It's basically due to global warming, and that's thanks to humans, especially billionaires, exploiting people and resources. The ice caps are melting, and this unleashes these critters that have been trapped in there since the ice age first put them into the polar caps. And there is a cult of Hemosaurus that when you are thawed out and you show up on the land, they're like, we've been training for this, and then they run you through your tutorial, and then they also give you different missions in the story mode for like going through the game, and like your whole point is you are punishing humans and the billionaires and whatever. Like, I guess you're on the search for the billionaires and you're going through towns on the way there. And you're just like destroying the buildings, punting people. You can punt them, you can eat them, you can also punt them into objects like buildings and helicopters. Like, you take down helicopters by kicking a person into it.
Okay, that's cool. Although I have to say, the systemic critique is a little bit undermined by you just devouring the common man wholesale and destroying their homes.
Well, I mean, like, you're supposed to be destroying
the middle class and anyone we can get our hands on.
Well, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, all of humanity is responsible for the climate thing. Yes. So, you know, whatever. And we'll eat everybody.
I'm not expecting political coherence from a dinosaur game. A rampage
like, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, all these monsters are surprisingly cute.
They are. There's also like a sloth guy, and then there's a salamander, and then there's the Hemosaurus, and then a mecha Hemosaurus. Mm-hmm. So, it's quite fun. Does. Yes. Yeah. But yeah, also rescue cats and dogs, apparently, but I haven't gotten to that point in the game yet. So
do the different characters play differently, or is it just aesthetic?
I don't know. I've been playing the game as Hemosaurus. I don't know. Gotcha. Like, if I were playing multiplayer with people, I'd be switching characters and then I would be able to tell you, but I haven't been.
Gotcha.
It looks like there's a surprising amount of physics to the buildings falling over and helicopters getting knocked out of the sky.
Yeah, and you can knock one building into another building and then fall, and like both of them fall over, and then or that building will hit the other building, like, you know, the whole, you know,
domino
as buildings do. You know. But it's fun. It's just, it gets repetitive when it's just by yourself. It gets repetitive even if it's not just by yourself, but it's much more noticeable when you don't have friends and you're not, you know, changing out who's playing. So,
do they explain the name? Because it sounds like it's a blood lizard, but there's nothing bloody about this lizard.
Maybe because he creates rivers of blood. I don't know. Okay. I don't know. They have not said so far in the game. So, but yes, it's pretty long. It feels pretty long. So like I only take a little bit. I only do like a couple of the levels at a time because I don't want to do too much of it and then just hate it, you know? So
yeah, it's probably wise.
So I'll get there when I get there. I have not beaten it, but like I have played a fair amount of it, and it is a fun little game. And I saw it because it was advertised on Blue Sky. Somebody was sharing, you know, I think it was Lauren Lemke himself was sharing, you know, the video game and going, it's on sale for however much. And I was like, oh, hey, cool. I'll pick it up. It looks like a Rampage.
Pretty arcade heavy show so far.
Except this last one. So
yeah, I was gonna say I was setting you up for the segue.
right. So this last one though, it is Many Nights a Whisper. So this is a short interactive essay on dreams, pressure, and expectations, and it was released last April, and it was developed by Deconstruct Team and Selkie Harbor, and published by Deconstruct Team. They also did the Red Strings Club, which has been either in my backlog or my wish list or whatever off and on. But this is the same person who did that.
It's the same team that did Gods Will Be Watching, a game which is impossible.
This one's not impossible. So
okay, that's good.
Yes. Yes. So in this one, you are a person that is chosen in this small town that's on an island to be the dreamer, which is somebody who basically every so often there's like this ancient ritual. And in order to vitalize the town, the dreamer, as they are training to basically like their job is on a certain day of a festival or whatever, they take a slingshot and shoot something over to the torch that's out in the water off the side of the island. And then like that lights up. And if they do it accurately and they are successful in lighting that torch, then all of the wishes of the people who have come to ask you for wishes, you know, along the way as you've been training, get their wishes if you've accepted them. So
no pressure.
Right. So no pressure because of multiple fronts. So there's that angle where you have to train every day and you're trying to learn how to use the slingshot with the wind and the whatever, all this other mess. And then while you're doing that, like that's your daytime. And then at night, you have to sit next to a wall and then village people will come up and they stick their braid, like they grow a braid of hair in honor of this thing. And then they take it to this temple. They, you know, stick their hair in the little hole and then they talk to the dreamer who's not allowed to say anything. And you listen to their request, whatever their request is, and then decide to grant it. If you decide to grant it, then you cut their hair off, like their braid. And then that symbolizes to them that you have accepted their wish. And then, you know, like they'll know that if you light the torch, then their wish will come true. So
it's the most wholesome kind of glory hole over here.
Right. So anyway, like you're going through several days of this, and then like every night after you've heard the prayers of the people and then you decide which ones you want to accept, you have dreams, and those dreams will tell you how that wish is going to turn out if you make it. And sometimes it seems like it's a good thing, but then it turns into actually that's a bad thing and there's some bad consequences that come along with it. And so like you basically go through the entire game aware of how the resolution would be if you make it into the torch. And at the end of the game, you have one shot, no additional shots, one shot at making it into that torch that you should have been training for this whole time. So if you don't train and you don't know how to work the physics of the game, you'll fail on that first shot. And so anyway,
only shot.
Yeah. So I made it when I did mine. So I was able to go, okay. And I didn't feel bad about allowing all the wishes to come true, because most of mine turned out really well, actually.
Okay.
There were only a few that I was like, oh, and then I learned what the whole kind of rhythm was to that kind of thing. You know?
Yeah. So like, if you just really fuck up and only pick the bad wishes, with the benefit of your premonitions, can you just decide to botch it?
Yeah, you can. Okay. You can decide to botch it if you want to. And so I made it on the time that I played through, and I wasn't going to go play through again to see what it said. But it's very funny because a friend of the show, the network, the whatever, Dave Jackson, he is doing an episode of Tales of the Backlog on this same game. And so he's been playing it, and I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize you were also playing that, because I just played it independent of you, not knowing you were going to pick it up. Like, what? Why are you playing this Jala ass game? You know. But anyway, then he said he's doing an episode on it, and that he failed. He played it once a few months ago, and he failed. Okay. And then he just was playing it today, and he failed again.
Oh no!
So I was like, well, what even happens? By the way, I'll tell you what happens if you like do the thing and you get the wish. Like, I'll tell you about that ending.
Don't share that. He's got to earn it.
But, no. Like, I don't want to have to earn missing the thing. So you know. Anyway, but yeah, we swap stories. Basically, if you miss it, it gives you a kind of like short little message about like accepting stuff and rolling on with your life and moving forward past that without like dwelling on it. And then if you do make it, then it's something about like the success and like how you need to keep yourself humble still and connected to, you know, being present with everybody instead of up here, you know, like trying to value yourself. Oh, I did it. I made the wishes come true. Kind of like, you know, I'm a god or whatever. And then that's it. That's the end of the game, one way or the other. But it's an interesting thing as a thing to experience. So even though I just told you what happens, like,
I mean, it's all in the details, right? Like, you just gave us the premise, really.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and then too, it's like there's that one shot. Can you make that shot? You know, you get one chance. You know, you can practice a lot on all the days beforehand. You don't have a time limit for how long you practice. So if you want to, you could grind the hell out of that until you know it, you know, very well. But
no,
anyway. Still comes down how to much, that one.
Yeah. What's the time? Like, how much time does it take to get to the one shot at the end?
I want to say 3 hours. Let me see. I can look it up. Maybe 3 hours. It's not that long.
And I can't imagine you can do a quick save right before it.
No.
That feels like it would diminish the point.
Okay, not even 3 hours. I did it for a little bit under 2 hours. So, and I got to the ending. So it's not like the biggest time sink, even if you want to go back in and intentionally either do it or not do it, you know, like. It's not that big of a time sink, but it is an interesting little experience. And I was looking at some of their other games and stuff, and I was like, oh, I might have to add some of these to my endless wish list, you know? So,
yeah. Nice. Yeah. Something I wouldn't have heard about. I don't know that I have any questions about it. It sounds neat.
Yay. Could you just talk briefly about the art style? Because there's a weird blending between cell shading and pixel art going on, where like a lot of the characters moving around look like it's cell shaded, a little bit like Rime was, you know, that kind of style. But then the details of their face are all very pixel art. Jarred me on first reaction. Does it just kind of blend in over the course of playing the game? Or?
Yeah, like you just kind of get used to it, because like even though it's not going for a very obvious specific era of old game, it wants to feel kind of like, you know, older game style. You know, is my general feeling.
It looks like a higher detail, like Mega Man Legends kind of style.
Right. It's like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like just where the faces are like kind of like pixelated, like decals on the facial model, as opposed to being. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I also like the, like, it feels kind of unstuck in time. Your mentor, you know, is wearing very, what looks like traditional garb, timeless kind of, attire. And then you're wearing a sleeveless band t-shirt.
Yep. Yeah. You're rocking a wolf cut.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
That's just, so. It's very, I don't know if the game ever comments on that directly, but that
not really. Basically, like, it gives you the idea that even though it's the modern day, these people have this ancient ritual that they still follow. So they still have, like, you know, like the old way about them or whatever you want to say. Yeah. So.
And it's a very unique vibe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that's also worth a look. That's all I got. How about y'all?
Ben, you weren't here last week, so I'll throw to you.
Yeah, I just got one. I mentioned this before, but since I was going to be on the couch a lot this weekend, I picked up Silksong on the Switch.
Oh, shit.
So,
oh, wow. All right.
How does that play on the Switch?
It plays fine enough. I think after a couple of hours, it's good to take a break, and because your hands are getting like bricked a little bit. But right. But yeah, no, it's. I think largely it's been good. It's like, you know, it's like I have the Switch, and it's kind of like my Balatro machine, more or less. So it is nice to remember, like, oh yeah, I can get games like this on there, and that makes for like a really different experience than just playing on my PC. But yeah, the game itself, probably sunk maybe 5-10 hours in. I've gotten to like 5 of the biomes, I think.
Okay.
And I don't know how many boss fights, because I feel like it's kind of murky, like when something is a boss fight or not. Like, I guess there's the like round fights versus like a single guy.
Right.
I mean, it's been a long time since I played the first Hollow Knight, but I mean, the game feels really good. It has like the Mario jump all over the place, like with with kind of like all the fine details of movement that you can do. Just like small things, like when you grab a ledge to pull yourself up, if you press the jump button, you can jump off of that and like chain that if you're like going up places. And then kind of like movements that you unlock as the game progresses, like all feel really good. So, yeah, I don't know. I can't remember how far people have gotten on this game or who had played it. Was it you and Moxie K? Or
I think I played Moxie a good amount but fell off.
Okay.
So Dennis, you played a good amount and fell off. I forget how far Moxie got. I remember them talking about fighting Lace, but that's about it. I progressed to the Moth boss fight.
Okay.
On the docks, and then I bounced off of that, and I went and did like everything else that I could, trying to power up, and still couldn't beat the Moth. So that's where I dropped.
Is the Moth the one where you're on the log, or
you're like at a dock at an underground sea? Kind of deal. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So that's kind of like. I'm kind of at a teetering point right now because I've had a good time with it. The bosses have felt fair, where it's like they're a little difficult, but then like once you learn the moves, you kind of like have your feet under you and you can get it after a couple of tries. But I'm at the point now where it's like I basically have two options that I can explore. One is like a series fight, and then one is like a new area. And so the series fight is the one that I'm trying to like beat my head up against the wall playing, where it's like 4 rounds and I can typically make it to the 4th one. But then when it gets to that point, I have a hard time beating that. And then it's also at a point where you have to kind of boss run to get there. So like I'm worried that I'm at like a sticking point and won't be able to like continue on in the game. So I think at a certain point, I'll try the other direction and see how far I can get there. But yeah, we'll see. I don't know.
How are you feeling about the amount of health bosses have?
I'm okay with that, I think, so far. Like, sometimes it's annoying, but at the same time, it's like, for me, it's more about once you, like, know their moveset, it's usually... like it's like the difference between knowing and not knowing, and like once you understand like how they telegraph their moves and what to do, usually I feel pretty good. Like usually it takes me only like 2 or 3 tries before I can beat them after that. I think the exception, they've done this in a couple of places, is with like the round boss fights. there's not really an add of complexity. It's more like they'll just throw more people at you. It's like, oh, can you beat this one? You can beat this one.
So many
now ads. Let's put them both together and like see what you can do. And that feels less good because it's like, it's there's a lot of situations where it's like, well, I could not get through, or it would be very hard for me to get through these two people without taking a hit. Like they, like if you get like cornered or something like that.
That's the problem with any multi-phase boss fight. Yeah.
Well, and with this case, it's like, I attribute it to there's like two entities and they act independently. And I don't know how much like polish was put for them, like both acting together. Like I don't think they do any sort of AI where it's like they consider where the other one is and try and like balance that out with like making it possible for you to get out of certain situations. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. They do give you like utilities. You have the like throw your dagger ability or whatever. Like the up, right button where you like throw a one shot, but it's like a limited resource you have. So like sometimes I've leaned on that for boss fights where it's like, all right, I'm gonna go on the opposite end and like do that, but that doesn't work for everybody. So
no,
but I mean, outside of that though, the game I do think is really impressive, like the level of polish on it. Like it just looks gorgeous. The like all the characters and the animations look really good, just like the depth of feel and like the small effects that they have. Like an example, like if you knock an enemy off and they fall into like the lava, like the effect that comes up when they do that, like is like, oh, this is great, like attention to detail that like they didn't have to do that sort of thing, but it's like a really nice touch. I definitely appreciate that. I have a sneaking suspicion that it'll be similar to what my experience is with Hollow Knight, where I'll get to a certain point where I don't know where to go, or there's few places I can go, but they're too hard for me, and then I'll be like, well, I guess I'm out. But that said, I don't feel too bad about that, given that this is like a $20 game and that the polish like looks really good on it. So, especially when you compare this to other games like in the indie field, I do think it's punching way above its weight for the cost. So,
yeah, I mean, to the point where some people got angry that they priced it so low because it makes other stuff look like a worse value in comparison.
I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know, I wouldn't,
I don't have an opinion on that. I think that's a little bit silly, but
yeah, it's like, if they can make a game, I trust them to set the price of their game, I guess. But like how many biomes have you all got to, I guess, because I
can't remember. There were also ones that were just like barely differentiated, and I can't remember if there was a title card in between them or not.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the marrow and the areas next to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like the green starting area. There's like the crypty kind of area, the lava-y kind of area. Another green hunting kind of area.
Did anyone make it to the chapel or whatever, like the first like objective that you're given, or
no?
Okay. Cause I'm curious if it's like a Dark Souls situation where it's like you get there
it almost assuredly it is.
Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. It's like a 40, 60 hour game, something like that. It's absurd. Wow. Yeah.
It's so hard to gauge because it's like, well, I've spent 2 hours trying to beat this boss fight. So it's like, does that count as like gameplay time?
It's pretty massive.
It does remind me of like Death's Door, for example, as far as like the, okay, I got to redo this fight over and over again, but I'll eventually get it. Like if I try hard enough, or like memorize like the things, it does get frustrating when you hit a wall and there's no, tools to help you get around it seemingly.
But, the name of the boss that I got stuck on was the Moorwing boss in Greymoor was the name of it. Yeah.
Okay. I've gotten to that area. I don't know if I've seen that boss yet or not. So
I think I crapped out on the beast fly.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a really fucking hard boss fight. That is like, that is infamous because you only take like two hits off of it. It's wild.
Well, you want to talk about the ads as well. It starts spawning in just, you know, regular enemy ads, but at a certain point, there's just so much going on the screen that you're like, nah. Something's going to land.
Yeah. I just, my problem that I ran into, you know, just what you're describing with like, oh, once I know the attack patterns and how to respond, it's just two or three more tries after that. Like, I know it. I know how to respond because like as complicated as the bosses can get, it's still, you know, like maybe at most like six, seven things to memorize. It's not like it's not like Sekiro, you know, or like later like Elden Ring, you know, boss blitz kind of things. But even when I know, it still requires such sustained perfection.
Yeah.
You know, and just with how little health you have compared to just how massive their health bars are. It's just like, I get it. I get it. I understand. Let me through.
Yeah. It reminds me of Astro Boy, like the final like level of that, like took like multiple hours to beat. And it's
Astro
like
Bot?
Yeah, the PlayStation one, the most recent one.
Yeah. Astro Boy is something else.
Oh, Astro Boy is an old anime.
But it's like, yeah, like what you're talking about, where it's like, I can do all these things individually, but you're asking me to do 100 things in a row, like correctly. And so just by the sake of like probability, I'm going to fail at one of those like 99% of the time.
That's so, what I'm saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is, it is frustrating when that's like how they choose to do difficulty. Yeah. That's probably not the best like gameplay way to do it, but
mm-hmm. Not terribly engaging for me at that point.
Yeah.
No. I don't have any other questions about it. Did you have anything besides Silksong?
That's all I got. I have a bunch of games I've like half played, but none that I really want to talk about. So
mm-hmm. Makes sense.
As you do.
Yeah. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I'm excited to have Jala on because I can talk more about One Finger Death Punch. and also the terribly named One Finger Death Punch 2, which should have been called Two Finger Death Punch. I talked about this last week. I finally booted up One Finger Death Punch and had a ton of fun with it. And then Kay, I forget what I was being unreasonable about specifically, but you're just like,
it was that the sequel was like, oh no, it's $2.
Oh yeah. like,
this is less than a fountain pop at the gas station. I'm just going to do this because like,
yeah. So I don't know. I probably just messed something up in the settings, but my cloud save from One Finger Death Punch wasn't showing up on my Steam Deck.
Okay.
And so it made for a very easy delineation of like, oh, One Finger Death Punch is on my PC. And then I'll put One Finger Death Punch 2 on my Steam Deck. And so it was very interesting to compare and contrast those experiences because One Finger Death Punch, I'm playing just with the mouse, so left clicking and right clicking on my PC. I'm just going to call it Two Finger Death Punch. For the second one, I mapped the like clickers on the back of my deck to be the buttons.
Oh, the little paddles, yeah.
Yeah, little paddles on the back, which just has a real snappy feel on it. But that is... just from like a brain wiring thing. Now I'm using
going from one hand to two hands,
left and right side. Yes. Versus two fingers on one hand. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was that, or if the second game is actually designed to be easier, or I just was up to speed, but I was flying through levels in the second game. I was crushing it. So, I think that has to do with like, now I'm using two hands instead of one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I really got to apply my knowledge and then came back to One Finger Death Punch and you know, was back to my old ways.
Yeah.
So the benefits of the second game did not make their way back to the first game.
See, if it was Two Finger Death Punch, they could actually have like V for Victory and then Death Punch.
God, yes.
And it would have been the best. There would be your logo.
Yeah. That's the problem. Is the like Zhao Zhao guys are just you know they don't have any.
If it was the V though, it would look like five, and then you run into the metal band.
Yeah, that's true.
Huh. So in the second game, just a couple notable things. The first game has boss fight levels where the entire level is against one character that will like continually change what combination of buttons you need to hit. across the course of the level, and you're whittling down their health bar. In the second game, those kind of bosses can just show up within a level. So there's some brawling bosses that kind of do a little left, right click mini game. Mm-hmm. And then there's the actual boss. So they call them brawlers. And then there's bosses now that you're doing that game. But when you're doing it against brawlers, it kind of pushes everyone else away and focuses in.
Okay.
And you just focus on dueling that one person. The bosses, you're doing that, but you have everything else in the level going on at the same time as well.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So an extra step up in difficulty there. They also added, you know, a lot of times when I would die in the first game, it was due to either I just had two people coming from either side so perfectly timed that like I can't left and right click fast enough. Like if I hit the one on the right, the left one's going to get me and vice versa. In the second game, I noticed very quickly that if there were people positioned like that and you click on either one, it'll do a special move where you like take out both.
Oh, okay.
Which is an insanely high cool factor because there's unique animations for it and everything like that. But also it was a little bit like, oh, I feel like I'm playing on easy mode now. and then the other thing was that picking up weapons in the first game can be a little bit confusing. Sometimes you'll pick it up as part of an attack. Sometimes you'll pick it up as part of killing the person holding the weapon. And then sometimes it needs its own click. And reacting to what that is in the moment resulted in a lot of deaths for me. In the second game, that seemed a little more streamlined, and I haven't died to it yet. And again, it's one of those things where like, okay, this makes it an objectively better game. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like I'm getting away with something now. Like, you know, it's,
I mean, you could just map the controls on. If it's meant to be just like one thing, you almost would want to do it on the right stick, right? Like mm-hmm. when I tilt left, I attack left. When I tilt right, I attack right.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah. So very much enjoying those games. Jala, do you remember how long ago you played and or talked about One Finger Death Punch?
I don't even know if I ever actually talked about it on here. So,
oh, I know you did because that's what put the game on my radar. Huh. So I know for sure that you talked about it.
I have no idea. I don't know.
It was that long ago. Okay.
It was that long ago. Cause,
oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, fun to have that one out of the backlog finally.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is One and Two Finger Death Punch. Damn it. I'm enforcing the name.
Yeah. Nice.
Cool. And then the other big thing is the new Trackmania season came out today. Okay. And the last time we talked, I think, Kay, you had mentioned, like, that's... I was about to say, it's that time of the month.
No.
not
how this
that,
works, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, yeah, okay, it's time for the new Trackmania season. And they had delayed it. I couldn't remember why. It's because they're on some big like 20th anniversary of the release of the game.
Okay.
That started it all or whatever.
I remember so it being... Moxie was more concerned that they went from putting out like four of them a year to three or something.
Yeah. Right. And so no, not the case. They just wanted to sync it up with their birthday essentially.
Okay.
And there's actually a ton of content that they added. There's a lot on the esports front. So the Trackmania is now featured in a bunch of esports competitions that they weren't before, and they're ramping up on that side even more than they've done in the past. Mm-hmm. And then there's also additional like competitive maps. They always have a cup of the day where there's like one track that everyone races on. Mm-hmm. And then now I guess there's going to be a cup of the week where it's a track that kind of sticks around a little bit longer and people can spend a little bit more time mastering. But the big add is four new biomes. Which doesn't feel like it should be a relevant thing in a racing game. But you have to look back across Trackmania to see, like, it used to be in old Trackmania games that each car had a specific biome associated with it.
Yeah, like there were dune buggies and ice trucks and stuff, yeah.
Exactly. And so like all the maps for a given car were in a very specific distinct biome that has a lot of personality. Well, now you can kind of build with all of those biomes. There's like canyons. There's like a tropical kind of area, snowy. And then I forget what the last one is off the top of my head. But you know, there's all these kind of different geographic locations that you can set your map in. Whereas before it was all kind of encased in this stadium. Yeah. In fact, stadium was a biome from previous games.
So I
think functionally what this does is it makes it a lot easier to do scenery for your tracks. It makes it a lot easier to make them feel like they are situated in a world instead of just kind of floating on their own. And that's good. That allows more people to create and all that. At the same time, I kind of really liked the aesthetic that we had before these biomes, which was all the scenery was kind of constructed out of track pieces, out of like signage and everything. So there was it felt a little bit artificial, but in a way that made a lot of sense for if you were racing in a stadium in front of a crowd.
A little bit less sense when you're trying to mimic something natural.
Yeah. Like, okay, well now I'm just, you know, doing these crazy laps across the Wild West, I guess. And for people that have nostalgia for the old games, it makes total sense. Like, I get it. But there is something in the kind of the conceit that ran through all these tracks of, you know, you'd notice pieces of scenery were actually like made out of bits of road, or like, oh, hey, you used this piece that's usually, you know, a booster as a sign to point in a certain direction. And like those little touches were fun. And I would hate to see those disappear now that you can just kind of situate it in a geographic location. That is, you know, I'm sure people will still do it the old-fashioned way just because that was such a developed aesthetic of its own. But we'll see how that all maps out. New campaign is good. I'm through the first 15 tracks out of 25, so I'll comment on that on a later date. But mostly I'm just relieved that this delay was not, at least I don't think it was, indicative of Trackmania falling to the wayside. And instead it seems that they are alive and kicking as well as they've ever been.
Nice.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
So, Trackmania is back mania.
It's the game that just, God, fucking Dennis. No, it's good to hear that they're continuing to go strong. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Like, yeah. That's the game that keeps on giving. Still free.
You can play it for free. Okay. I think it's the first 10 maps of any campaign of the current campaign are free. It's a pretty nominal fee. You get like all of the previous campaigns and all of the creator made stuff, which that's what you're playing for anyway. And you also get to give your car a custom skin. Which is very funny because like the idea of like, oh, I get skins, but then literally everyone who plays the game picks one and never changes it. So it's very far from like a Fortnite where you want to swap around. Like you find a livery that is you, and then like people would comment if you changed it. So
you've changed.
Exactly. Yeah. I like mine. I'll have to share a picture of it, but it's a. Yeah, I would. Barrett was actually watching me play today, and he commented because now with the campaigns, as you progress, you unlock new skins.
Okay.
He's like, "Oh, Dad, you got a new skin." I was like, "No, but I have to stay with this one."
Yeah. People are gonna make a big deal out of it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's best just to avoid it.
It's enforced. Yeah. So that's me.
Cool. I have like one and a half something. I did
one and a half finger death punch. Sorry.
Yeah, it's the integral. I did pick up on my Switch Ball X Pit.
Did you see the comment
Ball X Pit? that is funny. I have no idea if that's what they were going for. I don't know. It's kind of just the British. Apparently the old Xbox game grabbed by the Ghoulies. Like it was an intentional play because I guess Ghoulies is slang for balls.
Oh no way.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. Impossible Island.
Shout out to Stone Skeleton, by the way, for pointing that out. The Brit bollocks. Yeah.
So I didn't get too terribly far in that, but I can see a lot of the appeal. The only reason I didn't continue playing it more was just because I've got homework to do to get ahead for the couple of weeks when I'm going to be moving. So I'm looking forward to picking it back up and kind of gumming at the edges of it. But like, I haven't unlocked like new characters or anything. I've just kind of gotten a tour of the systems mostly.
Gotcha. You're at base character, first level, that sort of thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. What I'm finding is, and I guess this is the way that every one of these ends, but just I'm not putting out enough damage or enough projectiles to stop the skeletons from building up. And then I just kind of die when they hit the back. So like, I don't know if that's just a matter of picking my power ups more wisely when I get levels up, or if that is just a matter of like I'm just gonna need to get resources and unlock like base upgrades
in order to
get a better starting position.
Yeah, that's like the general flow of the game. It's like you'll get to a new level, it's pretty hard to make progress in it, and you probably won't beat it like your first try. But then like subsequent rounds in between, you gain resources by the town aspect of it and engage with that, and then kind of make progress through that, through the meta progression.
Yeah. So it's neat. I'm looking forward to playing more of it. It seems like a perfect game to have on the Switch for just a run or two, you know, when I'm taking a break. So yeah, ball cross pit, whatever we decide to say.
Say it.
The other thing that I've been playing, I streamed My Winter Car for a night this past weekend.
And you didn't fall into a black hole and do only that?
No, I've got shit to do. My freaking house is a disaster. There are extenuating circumstances here, Dennis.
Okay.
I want to get a top line thing out of the way. The developer of My Summer Car, My Winter Car has started doing AI shit. And even like backported AI music and stuff like into My Summer Car. So I got this when it came out, and I was, you know, when I was setting up the stream, I was looking in the settings just to make sure everything was put together right. And I saw like an option, which is off by default, thankfully, for like, do you want AI music in the game? It's like, no. But apparently there are AI textures and stuff, so it's like, well, shit, I've already played too much of this to return it. So that is a massive bummer. Mm-hmm. I don't know what their justification is for it. It's a solo dev, but you made all of My Summer Car, and it was good without that. So so I want that to kind of be acknowledged at the start before I talk about the rest of it, because like the rest of it that I played, I had a good time with. So this takes place a few years after my summer car. You're the same character in roughly the same town, but things have changed, you know, like the old market where you used to go, like now has been taken over by a bar next door to expand it. And you do all of your marketing at like basically like the equivalent of like a Sheetz or a Wawa, like a gas station, grocery store, restaurant kind of deal. You start out with a car, weirdly. It's not your project car. So like there are some weird stuff about it. Like I ended up needing to do some work on it, which I'll get to here. But I was like, I spent a bunch of time trying to figure out how to pop the hood. You can't. It's basically like a golf. it's like a golf cart almost.
Oh, no.
That you have to put gas into. There's not a lot of not a lot you can do. Your character. So in My Summer Car, one of the only like the only portable way to sate your thirst meter in the survival portion of the game, you know, was beer. You there was no bottled water or anything you could bring around. So you end up drinking like a fish in that game, in addition to the primary way to make a bunch of money is to brew a bunch of sugar wine, which, you know, you can botch. And it lowers the value, et cetera. Apparently that stuff was an actual thing that Finnish people did during their depression in the 90s, was brew that stuff up. And apparently it tastes like sin, even if you do it right. So all of that has kind of come home to roost. Instead of a thirst meter, you have a meter that just says problem. Which is funny when you look at it and you see it going up. You're like, huh, I wonder what that is. And you're like, oh, there's no thirst meter, and you know, that's maxed out. And so the way that you could get the thirst meter down in the first game too, if you were like at your house, you could just go and turn on the sink and lean over it and fill up your thirst meter that way. This doesn't do it. It's the problem is your alcohol withdrawals. So there is no way to reduce that meter without having the money to buy alcohol of some form or fashion. And so you've got to start figuring out a way to get that. And I have no idea what the jobs are, because again, I only played this for a couple of hours and got into a humorous situation. So you also have moved. You're no longer at the little house that's kind of like in the little peninsula in the middle of the lake. That's like literally a 20-minute in-game drive from any town, any store where you can go do anything.
Oh, jeez.
You live in an apartment that is near, near where you can do your shopping, and you start out with a car. So I get in and I go, I get that car started. And what's weird about it is, like, your parking spot has it plugged in. Like, there's a, you're plugged into something, and it's not an electric car, 'cause you still put gas into it. I've got no idea like what actual machinery this is fixing. You know, like just like what that's emulating. But you get in and you start the car just fine. And I go and take a little drive and spot a couple of things. The old gas station isn't there anymore. So I go into the tavern and check that out. And then I find the actual gas station and, you know, go and explore that. And then I get back in the car and it doesn't start.
Oh no.
I'm like, oh my God. And like the meters, like the little like dashboard lights are all messed up. I'm like, okay. And it's getting dark. And the store, thankfully, is open 24 hours, and you can buy like, you know, a replacement battery or something. You know, just you can buy like car stuff in there, car, you know, consumable car maintenance things. So I go in and I go in and buy a battery, because like I figure the battery's shot if it's not starting up. And still doesn't start. And it's dark and I can't figure out like, okay, the gas tank is a quarter full. So, well, shit, I need to like get home so I can sleep, because the fatigue meter is full. So I guess I'm walking. And some games, they
have... You can't
have...
sleep in your car?
No, you can't.
Damn.
It's not that far of a walk, but like... In a lot of games, nighttime means like, oh, things just turn kind of blue. You know, maybe it's a little bit dimmer. There are other games that commit to darkness as like this completely debilitating thing. There is like The Forest that does this. Outer Wilds does this as well. If you're on like the wrong side of, if something's cast in a shadow, like you can't see shit. Unless you have the light on, and even then sometimes there's nothing for it to bounce off of, so it's not really illuminating anything. And then this game, where I am on my way back and I'm walking, I'm in the cold, so there's nothing I can do to warm myself up. I get back into the town, and then oops, there are no streetlights between the town and my house. There's no mini map, so I'm just walking in roughly the direction that I think my house is. Miraculously, I find it.
Oh, man.
I'm unable to sleep because I left the beer that I bought in the car. You wake up with when the problem meter is full and like the camera's like shaking, like it's mimicking like delirium tremens. And it's like, okay, well, this is a fucking nightmare. So I pass the night in the game's equivalent of real time, waiting for it to get light enough for to walk back to my car. Ultimately, somebody in the chat had to look up how to start this thing. It won't start unless you open the choke all the way, and while you are turning the ignition, spam the accelerator, like tap it multiple times in order to get it to turn over. Never would have figured that out in a million years. And by the time I did, the stream is about to end. So I was like, I want to go visit the old house and see if that's where like the garage is still, because you need a place to build the car. And then I was going, and there were police lights on the highway that goes around, and there's a guy like, you know, waiting to stop. It's a breathalyzer check. And so I get a 400 mark fine, because even though I'm not shaking really, I still blow hot. I was like, okay, well, but I stopped my car in the wrong place. I didn't pull off to the side enough, and somebody rammed me into a ditch, and there was no way to get my car out of the ditch. And I was like, well, this save is fucked. So this has been my little preview of my winter car.
It's like nightmare Lord. Simulator.
Yeah, no, it's like literal nightmare shit. So really funny. Like, I could have gotten it out, but what that would entail is I would need to find where my tractor was. If the tractor is still in it, and that would entail getting to a bus stop in the morning, riding the bus around to the closest stop to where I think the tractor is, walking for God knows how long to get there, and then slowly driving the tractor around to a spot on the highway where there's a checkpoint set up, and you're not allowed to drive that thing on the highway. So
now, would you even know there's a tractor in the game if you hadn't have played the first one?
Probably not, no.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. So, like, it's, it is all very indicative. It's all very much in line with what, you know, the horrors that my summer car presented to you. And it just underlines. Okay.
So it's not even clear like what the objective is in the game yet, right? For my winter car, or?
Yeah, not yet. Like, I mean, stave off the shakes. Maybe eventually, if you let it go long enough, you die. Yeah. I mean, like, ultimately, like, it, you know, you do have to like do odd jobs to survive. And the only way to do that reliably is to build the car, which requires money. Like, your other options are terribly gas inefficient and incredibly slow. So like you need to build the car in order to work, in order to make the money to survive and upgrade the car, etc. But like with this, even though they start you with a car, you're still pretty far behind. Also, the roads are really icy, so it's easy to lose control too. Yeah. And all of this just underscores how disappointing the AI shit is, because I don't feel motivated to play more of this. I don't know if I'm going to be strong enough to hold off. Like, okay, what's going to break first? My principle, my desire to play this game, which is very much like a game that I really, really love, or the developer caving to pressure to take that shit out. I don't know. Any questions about my winter car?
No, I saw it for a minute.
Yeah.
It seems daunting. Like
they're giving the fans what they came for.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly daunting, but that's why I'm there for it. And
the Dark Souls of existence.
I think I called it last year when I talked about my summer car. I called it Quap for Existence. I think that was even the title. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh God. And that's what I've got is Ball X Pit a little bit and my winter car.
Nice.
Very cool.
Multiplayer.
Now it's time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. I said there would be a multiplayer at the start. false alarm.
The end thought.
The circumstances conspired. We'll repost the question next week. And I did not do the prep, so I did not get the stories up and see what people posted. I just know, Jala, that you usually post yours first. So I'll ask you, what's up?
I don't have
it. Oh, right. Hold on.
No. I actually do have something small. So, like, I don't have a news story, like a big news story. I have a very specific to my, you know, prior gaming / whatever interests, you know, like for a very small thing. So the dev of Cyclopean, who is working on Cyclopean 2, just a couple of things. He released the Cyclopean 1, Cyclopean the Great Abyss, the soundtrack to that just a few days ago. And it's available in various places, but it is available on Steam. And I have to say, until I listened to it again, I was like, oh, I did not realize how much I actually have very strong fondness for the opening theme that I would have, you know, for that game. Because when I'm streaming, I just leave the audio for the game on for whatever the title screen is until I pop on, you know, after a person or two joins. And because of that, I listened to so much of that opening theme that even though it's very simple, I'm like, oh yeah, I really do like this, and I need to get this soundtrack. So I did. But nice. Also, the dev is working on trying to get a demo together for the next fest. I don't know that he's going to release that yet, though, because he's still building a lot of stuff. Cyclopean 2 is much larger. There's a lot more world to it, and it's not just an expanse of the palette, but and the overall world and the Dreamlands, but it's also just considerably bigger. He's already got the assets from the first game, and you know, he's got the engine and everything worked out, so you know, making the sequel allows him to just do more.
Just so, already has the tools,
right? Yeah, right. So I'm looking forward to playing that. If there is a Next Fest demo, if it's not that Next Fest, it'll be the one after. We'll catch it eventually. So,
problem with making a demo is it takes away from making the actual thing, right? Especially if you're solo. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right. So, yeah. Anyway, that's my little news. Mm-hmm.
Let's go to you, Dennis. Apparently Fable still exists.
They tried to kill it and it wouldn't die.
And by they, you mean the market. It's disinterest in Fable. No, or Microsoft's incompetence. Microsoft's incompetence. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Fable kind of always occupied the place of game series that I was like, oh, that looks really interesting, but never actually tried. And then I just, the more iterations of it came out, the worse it got until it disappeared.
Yeah.
And I always kind of regretted the never getting to try it, but I'm getting that chance now. There's a Fable reboot that is going to be coming out. They say right now fall this year, but you know, that's
as
likely to change as not. Yeah. But the idea is that this is a reboot of the game. It does not have direct connections to past games, but it is built, kind of in the same world. And so some of the lore and originating stories are the same. But it is going to be a, new story overall, with a very dense map. They're talking about every single building is going to be enterable. There will be a morality system like there were in previous games, but they're working to make it less binary. And so the things that you do will be viewed differently by different characters. And so, you might make some people mad or offended with your actions, and other characters might be very happy with them. So there will not be horns growing out of your head if you get too evil this time around.
That just runs counter to everything. Fable, as it was released, was just built around that binary.
Yeah. Right. Yes.
I love so that we've got non-binary choices. That's great.
Yes. You will be able to get married. You can play. It says you can choose your gender in Fable. Speaking of non-binary, I don't know if they'll have that option. Mm-hmm. But there will be marriages. There will be divorce. There will be home ownership, and all kinds of crazy stuff. I will be watching this with interest. Just I'm not going to go back and play the first game.
God no.
Even though no. I know there's a lot of affection for it in certain circles, but I'd be interested to see a competent reboot.
Yeah, some people got nostalgic for their growing up in the Great Depression. Like I don't know. Right. Yeah. No.
So it was bad. Did anyone here play the first Fable?
Yeah. Yeah, I played it. It was fine at the time, and I remember getting some enjoyment out of the first half or so of Fable 2 that I played. But we did Fable 2 on Watch Out for Fireballs a couple of years ago now, I think, and it was just dog shit. Oh, like the combat was incredibly simplistic. The writing is just juvenile, and not in a fun way. Just really simplistic and crass.
When the article talks about the trademark British dry humor and irreverence,
this is wet humor. It's not even dry. Like you could impress people with a fart emoji, like a fart emote in the mm-hmm. game. But if you held it for too long, your character would shit his pants and people wouldn't like you anymore. That's no, wow. That's just to call anything about Fable dry. No.
And this no. was a game made by adults, right? Or
yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Just checking.
I mean, that word means less and less every day.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. Anyway, it's coming. Well, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, it's the Forza Horizon people, so they know how to make a game. I just don't know if they know how to make this game or if it's even worth pursuing. This
it's weird that Knights of the Republic has been trying to make a remake and they just can't make the game, but it's like they're apparently making this remake but nobody's asking for it.
God, what the fuck is it with remakes? Because KOTOR had that, and then like they finally canceled the Prince of Persia Sands of Time remake. I don't know.
And in general, I know we've talked about this before, but like I'm very in favor of the idea of rebooting a game and like coming back with a different, interesting take. And I think video games in particular, there's some unique and fun ways you can do that in the medium. It seems like everyone finds it to be more of a sticky wicket than they expect.
Yeah.
Sticky wicket.
Sticky wicket.
I've got a story here. Oh, sorry. I
was just going to just explain that was some deep croquet slang right there.
Oh, yes. I didn't realize that.
I thought it was cricket.
I don't know enough about cricket to say. But
yeah, I can't. Yeah, I don't know.
I picked up that phrase from my hardcore croquet days.
So you need to know what cricket is if you want to have a crumpet. Or you got to know what crumpets are if you want to know how to play cricket, or whatever the quote is from Casey Jones from the first Turtles movie.
Yes. Oh, my God.
From like 1990, anyway.
I'm sorry, I went for the first phrase that came to mind, and that was a bad choice, apparently.
I've got a story. I didn't realize, apparently this was announced a little while ago, but Nintendo is adding Virtual Boy games to the Switch Online service.
Yep.
The expansion pack. This is remarkable, not because of any kind of like technological feat, although there is like they're selling like a special like VR dock that will give you the stereoscopic kind of approach, like a $100 full one or like a $24 like Nintendo Labo cardboard kind of deal. I don't know if you're going to be able to play these just looking at the screen. I don't see why you wouldn't. They're very simple games. But these are games that were just impossible to get a hold of, you know, mm-hmm. just because the system sold so poorly, it was discontinued so quickly. Just not a lot of them were made. But also, like, this is remarkable because Nintendo has done their level best to completely erase the Virtual Boy from their corporate history. So to mm-hmm. see them openly embracing it is an un-Nintendo-like move. Mm-hmm. Like, they fucking locked a Gunpei Yokoi, the person who invented the D-pad and like made Metroid, like this person who gave so much to Nintendo, also designed the Virtual Boy because of its lack of success. They basically like welded him into an oubliette. Like, it was really sad what happened to him. But yeah, it's coming on February the 17th. And the first batch of games includes like a lot of the launch games for the thing. So like there's going to be Virtual Mario or Virtual Boy Wario Land, which is pretty good, actually. Telero Boxer, which is a fun punch-out like. And then this seems like a mistake, a game called The Mansion of Innsmouth, which is maybe somebody localized this game that was previously a Japan only like dungeon crawler RPG set in the Shadow over Innsmouth world. Like a chance to play that officially in English. I think there was a fan translation at some point is interesting.
Yeah.
Anybody here have history with the Virtual Boy? Ever tried one of these bad boys?
Nope.
Jala, no. Ben, no.
I got one in the wild. We would go with my dad. He would do like he trained dogs, and so we'd go to like events for that, and all the kids would hang out together as the parents were doing their thing with the dogs. And one of the times a kid had a Virtual Boy.
Oh.
And we spent the entire time just playing that and messing around and like having our minds blown by this futuristic technology. Fortunately not our necks blown as well.
Yeah.
And that was the first, last, only time that I interacted with a Virtual Boy.
My cousins had a Virtual Boy, so I got a good amount of time playing this. Nice. Didn't have like free run of the thing, but like, yeah, it was impressive when I was 9 years old, you know. So like, yeah. That's a pretty big caveat, but like, I don't know, it wasn't that soon after the Game Boy, which was monochrome. So to see that everything was in red, not necessarily that big of a deal. I don't remember personally feeling that way. Yeah. The Mario Tennyson, it's pretty good. But that's the story. It's interesting. I'll probably, I don't know, probably pop for the $25 one. When you're in the process of touching every single thing that you own to move it across the continent, the idea of adding more extraneous expensive shit to your life becomes way less appealing. And then Ben, what the fuck's happening with Magic?
Ending on a bummer. This is just like a Magic is a tire fire type story. But this time the development is that they're being sued. Hasbro is being sued by investors and shareholders of the company because they printed too many Magic cards recently, is the claim of the lawsuit. So essentially what they're alleging is that by printing too many of their like cool cards, that they devalued the market for the collectors and then mm-hmm. devalued the brand. And so they're suing them for that.
That should be kicked out on standing. How does the secondary market hurt the brand? How does the secondary market touch the company's bottom line in any way?
I have no idea. I have no idea how any of this makes sense, but Yeah, it's just weird that the investors are suing their own company. I mean, I guess it makes sense if like they feel like they're losing money, but at the same time, yeah, I don't know. Magic does do a thing where it's like they have like Eternal sets where they'll print like new prints of old cards, but they have like specifically like a reserve list where they say like we're never going to reprint these cards as a way to try and keep the collector value up. But yeah, all of this stuff is like, to me, it's like who cares sort of thing, where it's like, I think we've talked about stories like this where it's like, hey, maybe don't put your life savings in a card, you know?
No, right. This is a fucking video game. It's not a speculative asset, no matter how much people like treat it like it is. Same thing with fucking Pokemon cards. Like, you can like having the ones that you want to have, and maybe you're going to pay a bunch of money for it. But like, I don't see it as the corporation's responsibility to foster that.
Yeah, it's a bit awkward. Yeah, and the people named in the lawsuit are the like the current CEO and previous CEOs, and then higher ups like at the company. So,
are they suing the board?
Yeah.
Quote from the suit: given the nature of Magic's secondary market, the rate at which new Magic card sets are printed and sold directly impacts the value of existing Magic cards to collectors. As such, the overprinting of new Magic sets would reduce the value of existing Magic sets. So they're arguing inflation on this.
Yeah. Even more confounding from the article is they cite that Bank of America did a report on this in 2022 that said, like, yeah, if you do print a lot of cards, this will, like, devalue the company. But it's like, why are they in here now? Like, what's going on? You know, like,
is there a gas leak?
It in a weird way, it speaks to the design of Magic that it is still exists and is still a fun game despite the cancer that is around this, or the, you know, like all the abomination that is around this card game. It's like,
So,
well, let's not go saying it's a fun game here. That feels like a bit of a stretch.
I mean, it's, I don't play Magic, but even I would get, people get a lot of enjoyment out of it, I would say. But also, like, isn't, correct me if I'm wrong, Ben, but isn't like this big, like, past few years resurgence of Magic almost due entirely to the Commander format?
Like, they've been cranking out a lot of IP sets, so I think that's been what a lot of the, I guess, more popular stuff has been. Like, they did a Lord of the Rings,
the set. Universes Beyond,
they do a lot more Commander decks now, but I'm not sure. I don't know how much that contributes to like their profitability. The people who play Commander love it, I'm sure. But
but like that is like, oh, people will buy the cards, but you can make a Commander deck without investing a whole bunch of money in the secondary market. So like it brings casual players in who are going to buy the cards if they want to. Yeah, I don't know. This, what this reads like to me is that the plaintiffs in the suit have interests in some kind of exchange, or some, they have interests in the secondary market that are separate and apart from their interest in the company itself.
I think the thing that they're arguing is like there's a short-term gain. If you like print out a bunch of like high value cards that already exist, people are going to snatch this up, you know, because it's a lot cheaper than buying the collector thing. So like that's, it's a way to get short-term profit, but then long-term like the market tanks. But again, it's like, When are people going to be legally accountable for a secondary market? And like, I don't know. It doesn't make sense because it's all about a speculative market based on pieces of paper. So
I think that this all starts, I mean, with the financialization of everything. But like, if things are ever going to get better, the ways in which we have normalized gambling, you know, up to and including speculative assets, including, I mean, not just polymarket and prediction markets, but like crypto and shit like that, and meme stocks and stuff, like all of that is just different forms of gambling that needs to be ripped out root and branch, and the incentives need to be fucking realigned, and shit needs to be less financialized, because this is, It's counter to anything that makes any of the shit good.
Ugh. Yeah. So hopefully other things don't head in this direction that are cool. So I don't
know. I hope the case gets thrown out.
Introduce you to the idea of enshittification.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody has to be exposed to it at some point, whether it's through their Gmail account or whatever. I it's weird because I'm rooting for Hasbro in this, but fuck Hasbro. Mm-hmm.
I know, right?
Fuck Wizards. Yeah.
This is everything sucks here sort of story. Yeah. So sorry that we ended on that.
It was my choice to go to you. How does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to level number 573. We really appreciate you taking the time. When this comes out, we're a day or two before the changeover in the Patreon. So go and read the announcements there to get the details. Nothing that's going to be affecting the level. In the stuff, but more unfilmable. We were talking off mic about what one of the upcoming unfilmables is going to be. Other business things, something that will affect the level is my upcoming move. So I'm just going to say there are going to be two, maybe 3 weeks where we're not going to be able to do the show, because I'm going to be, driving across the country, and my shit is not going to be at my new apartment in time, most likely. So I'm going to say for sure we will not have a new episode on the 13th or the 20th of February, but hopefully we'll be back after that. It's possible maybe that there won't be an episode on the 6th, but I want to not take 3 weeks in a row. So that is just a heads up for everybody. So if you're listening to this, you don't wonder where the show went. Didn't cancel. I'm just I'm just repotting.
It is wild to think that potentially the next time we record, you will be in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wild.
I'm super excited.
Likewise.
Yes.
I'm excited for you, but also I was like, oh, so we're missing the Friday the 13th episode then, sadly.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that is a shame.
Maybe I can do. Those of us who are not moving their lives across the country could hop on and play some Friday the 13th or something. I don't know.
Since February is 28 days, we'll get another one in March.
Ooh.
Aha.
Are we?
I think so. 28.
That's how that works.
Divided by 7.
Holy shit. Yeah. Yeah, we are. Huh. Okay. Well, we'll definitely hit the March one. Jala, what's going on at Jala's place? Jala-chan's place. Sorry.
So the last episode was on Frankenstein, the Guillermo del Toro movie, which I have talked about numerous times on the show. I'm talking about it on my show now for hours. Mm-hmm. So Moxie is on that episode and will be on the next episode. So the next episode of my show is also on Frankenstein, the movie from Guillermo del Toro, because this first one is all production stuff, artistry, history of things, all the different background information for the most part. Also some discussion of themes and characters. And then the next episode will go into the movie itself and then kind of dig more into, what those themes are and, how they manifest in the movie. So that'll be next time on my show. So that's at jalachan.place. I was also, along with Dave, on an episode of Nostalgium Arcanum to talk about the movie Legend, which is one of my favorite movies that defines who I am. So I talk about that on that show as well. So check that out.
Woot. Nice. Anything else people want to promote? All right. I have been Kay. You can find me on Blue Sky at K.Zone.
I've been Dennis. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I'm Jalachan and all the places you can find me.
And I've been Ben Merkel.
And stick around for some titles.
I got a few.
Okay. Hit me with them.
Only cats.
Okay.
Dark Souls of Existence. I know that can't be it because of the name, but so yeah. Anyway. Uh-huh. And Non-Binary Fable.
Okay.
And then Sticky Wicket.
fucking damn British. Dennis, what do you have?
I've got two. I have Terminator 2D, The Bone Temple. Which I don't know if it was ever actually said, but I thought it. That was good. And then another twist on a game title. I have 1.5 Finger Death Punch.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
I just have Most Wholesome Glory Hole. I'm sorry.
Okay.
You won't do it, Kay, but that's what I want to be.
Yeah, no. I think that's going to be it by the laughs. Yeah, I don't have any titles written down. So the Most Wholesome Glory Hole is that works. It's not dirty, it's wholesome.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. Literally specifying that it is wholesome.
It is decided.